Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Birdwood Nook B, CJSF.ca, streaming worldwide. Today, you're getting two for one. We're doing elements of our Powered by Age podcast with one of our PBA podcasters, Dr. Ramona Serenasan, and we are doing some special music connecting CJSF. That they are going to have a preview. We're ahead of Labor Day. A couple of questions that we're working with today are, what does Labor Day mean? What does it mean to you in Canada? What does it mean to people that have come to Canada from other places? What does it mean to me as a dual citizen American? We're going to talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to talk about labor of love. What does it mean to have a labor of love, and what is your labor of love? So, Dr. Ramona, people have heard you before, but reintroduce yourself to our visitors, listeners.
So I'm Dr. Ramona, and I am a retired professor from Bombay University, India. I have a PhD in history, and I also teach French. Among my passions are writing and singing. So happy to be with all of you today.
Let me ask you, as a person who is an international traveler and instructor, what does Labor Day mean to you?
For me, Labor Day, coming from India, it's been, first and foremost, we celebrated on the 1st of May, and in the place that I was born and raised, Bombay, which is now called Mumbai, it's part of a province called Maharashtra. So Labor Day was also called Maharashtra Day to commemorate the creation of that state, Maharashtra. So what it meant for us is that it celebrated the solidarity of the workers who got together and they tried to get some advantages for themselves as far as working hours and wages went. So what they did on that day was to have continuously through the day, there were these processions, parades, a lot of speeches being given. But as a child, for me, it was fun because it was a holiday. As we grew older, it was time to spend with the family. And of course, always we enjoyed watching these parades going around. So that's how it went. And what about you, Charlotte? How have you experienced Labor Day?
Well, similarly, when I was a child growing up in Kansas City, I love Labor Day because it was a holiday and it was also the last holiday before we went back to school. So I like the parades, the special dinners. We had barbecue in our neighborhood. A lot of people would have barbecue in their backyard and we would go around, you know, sample and taste what each other had, vote on it. But later, I became aware of the history of it as a federal holiday in the United States. It's quite interesting, the connection between establishment of a Labor Day in the U.S. and Canada. Before it was a Labor Day, it was kind of recognized by labor activists in different states. And then different municipal governments in 1885 and 1886 began to pass ordinances. And finally, a day really organizing a Labor Day was February 24th, 1887. Can you imagine that? 1887.
Almost a Victorian era.
The it's not entirely clear who first proposed a holiday for workers, but there were two workers that made a solid claim as being the founder of Labor Day. One of those was Peter McGuire in 1882. He was the general secretary of the Brotherhood of Carpenters. And Joyners was also the co-founder of the American Federation of Labor. And they suggested setting aside a day for a general holiday for all the laboring classes to honor the people who had rode, who had gone through wound treatment, worked together to carve this holiday. McGuire's place in history was challenged because many believed that the machinist, Matthew McGuire, not Peter McGuire, founded the holiday. So there's still a lot of research going on. Matthew McGuire later became the secretary of Local 344 of the American International. Oh, that is really choppy. I'm going to go back over that. Peter McGuire's history in Labor Day did not go unchallenged. A lot of people believe that a machinist, Matthew McGuire, not Peter McGuire, founded the holiday. There's some recent research that supports that Matthew McGuire, who later was the secretary of Local 344 of the International Association of Machinists, proposed the holiday in 1882. The first Labor Day, moving around to September. Another reason I like it is my birthday is in September, so it was like two celebrations in right at the beginning of the month.
That's great.
But September 5th in 1882 was the first Labor Day parade, and it was in New York City. And it became a nationwide holiday much later. Now, in Canada...
Yeah, is it true that Labor Day, that Canada started Labor Day much before the U.S. did?
Wow.
Although, that's what they say, Labor Day originated in Canada. The first procession was held in New York, right?
Yeah, July 23rd, 1894 was when the government of Prime Minister John Thompson passed the law making Labor Day official, and they had a huge parade in Winnipeg. And that's when the tradition across the country started. The first one in the U.S. was about...
So that was 1894 in Canada, right? And I think in the U.S., the idea started in 1884. So then it still makes it.
It still preceded.
Yeah? Right, right.
Now, they've said that parades started in Toronto 20 years before the official Labor Day. There were parades and rallies in Toronto and Ottawa to celebrate the successful Toronto printer strike. Your city!
Yes.
1872, Toronto printers had a strike. It was the first or original fight for fairness. They got some major changes, including the decriminalization. Did you know that it used to be a criminal offense to have a union?
Oh, God. Yes. So that it legalized unions then, right?
Yes.
Once was official. I was reading a few fun facts as well about Labor Day. So one was that Labor Day signals the beginning of the football season.
Okay, yes.
The Canadian. And the other is, of course, it is the last day before school starts. So that is one. And the third one was that it is it's considered to be the last day that you can wear white. I mean, it's not a fashion statement to wear white after Labor Day.
Oh, yes, I wondered where that came from, because I would hear people, I thought it was a Southern U.S. thing, but, you know, apparently, as you said, other places it was considered unfashionable to wear white after Labor Day.
And the mean, I also read something, I don't know how far it's true, that it's the last day to eat hot dogs. So I don't know how, where that came from, but that seems to be one more of the fun facts, trivia on Labor Day. We should have a quiz for that, right?
Right.
And so, Charlotte, what does it mean to you, particularly Labor Day? Did you have any kind of traditions or customs that you followed?
Okay, hold on. I'm going to pause a second. This is Charlotte Frell, your own Sister C, here at the Place to Be, CJSF Radio 90.1. We are doing a pre-Labor Day discussion today, so you can listen in. And that question that Dr. Ramona just asked me, did we have any special things that we did in childhood, or do I have any special memories of Labor Day? You could ask that for yourself. Well, as you mentioned, the picnics, I think before I knew it was even a Labor Day representing unions or a celebration that everybody could be off, I just knew it was going to be a big picnic or a big outdoor gathering along our neighborhood. And I was excited as I got older that I was able to compete. I competed with my dad because I learned how to make barbecue sauce, his barbecue sauce. And you know, like everybody, we had alleys. All of Kansas City, there, you know, between every street, there was an alley. And so people would put their things, you know, at their garden or the back, put a table so you could go down along the alleyway and you could sample different things that different neighbors had. And people would kind of, they didn't have printed badges or something, but there was a kind of a agreement of who had the best potato salad or who had the best barbecue sauce. And so I put my barbecue sauce up against my dad's.
And who won? Who's better?
He was so amused, you know. I don't even know what people said at the end. They had a nice way of saying that they liked the best, or they would wink at my dad or touch his elbow. But it was very encouragement because nobody said, "Oh, kids, you can't match your dad." Everybody was encouraging about my sauce.
That's such fun.
Yeah, coming back to that question of what did it mean? As I grew older, we always thought about it was a little sad when Labor Day came because it meant it was the end of summer, that you were going to be in school and have homework. And instead of being able to go out and play in the afternoons, you would be getting that homework done. And then, since I was an older child, it also meant, you know, looking over my brothers and sisters' homework because my parents worked and they got home, you know, closer to 5, whereas we got out of school 3:30 or so. But in college time, I think most colleges had their first day back after school. Now all over the country, between two countries and different cities, people start at all kinds of time. So it doesn't really have that significance of being the kickoff
to school.
Yeah, to school, even to sports, because a lot of the sports have their introductory games or their pre-exhibition games before Labor Day.
Okay.
What about you?
Yeah, so for me, earlier on, like I mentioned, it was just fun watching the processions and listening to the speeches and enjoying the holiday. But recently, I've begun to kind of use it as a day for reflection. And of course, I'm filled with gratitude for the sacrifices that they have made so that we would have better working hours and better wages. And I also feel this kind, I feel, you know, this thought coming up, like what kind of society do that we want to build? Because we have received so much from the hands of those who preceded us. What do we in turn want to bequeath to those who come after us? And I hope some of our listeners can, you know, share their thoughts on that as well. I think it's worth thinking about because the scene is changing so much now at work, right? After the pandemic, up to now there was work from home. And now they're trying to get the workers to come back, and some of them don't want to do that, and they would prefer a hybrid kind of situation. So it's a very different scene from what it used to be when they began Labor Day and all that it meant. So all these questions were whirling around my mind. What do you think about that? Do you wonder as well?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, as I became older, and even, you know, when I was both in Canada and the U.S., I had the experience of being a member of a union and learning what solidarity means and seeing the difference in working in some places that were not covered by a union, where ideas like, a break, or having a break twice a day, or having some standard laws that are monitored around holidays for parents. I mean, not holidays, but maternity and paternity holidays. I think that the protection of workers was really an important thing that I saw a difference in with something like the supermarkets, where people have to stand. Unions have worked more to help people understand the reasons behind their strikes so that they could be supportive. The writers' union, a lot of people have hated it when the writers' union went on strike, because that meant it disrupted movies being made in Vancouver as well as Hollywood.
Yeah,
but when people understood that the people who write things, if they weren't protected, that sometimes somebody would write something, make a little money from it, but then because it wasn't protected for video or other types of communications, then that person might just continue to be a struggling artist. So I think one good thing, Labor Day is a kind of point of view where people make their issues clear, but I think it's helped more people to get a respect for it and understanding for organized labor and why to support it when a particular sector of workers go on strike. Like, people hated it when the buses went on strike and made their voices heard to her, you know, they would say, hurry up and settle this thing, because it was disruptive for so many people being able to get to work.
Right.
So I think one of the progressive things that have happened within maternity leave, and that kind of relates to the question you ask about people working from home. When people work from home, I've looked at some of these remote jobs, applied for some, and they say from 8 o'clock until 5 o'clock. And some people doing that work because, you know, when it's not protected by a union, people are on a timer. They can get dinged if they don't get off a call in so many minutes. It's very disruptive between the person that might have been working in an office, and people could see that they were working to solve a problem or they could get someone's help. Some people are really just being forced into call, not have an exercise break, a walk around break, a lunch break. I heard a little child, I was on somebody with the customer service, and I heard this little child say, can I have a sandwich, please?
Oh, yes.
Mommy,
yes.
Can I have a sandwich, please? And so I thought, oh, where's the shop steward? This woman's not getting a lunch break. But it's going to it raises some interesting questions about whether people who are remote workers will be able to organize or work. Get some kind of coverage.
Right. That's absolutely right. Because then, since they are all the while at home and they don't have to travel, I find my children are continuously working. After, you know, at night, they are preparing for some meeting for the next day. I don't think this used to happen when they worked in the office. Like, they would go there and come back and have dinner, and that's it. The day would be ended. But now it's going on and on.
I think there is, even as you said, that expectation. Well, since you don't have to drive to work, you should be able to do more work at home.
You should be, perhaps that is the thing.
But the drive to work, at most, you know, people might have an hour driving and an hour getting home. So that's 2 hours.
Right.
But working at home, instead of working 8 hours, a lot of people work 12 hours.
And like you said, no lunch break. There's no time. And the meetings and calls are all back to back. So that, you know, they just don't have a moment to take a break. I find that a little sad. They should have a lunch break. What are we working for? Kind of thing. If we can have a lunch break.
Do you think that people that have a Labor Day at a different time in other countries, do you see them practicing their Labor Day holidays here?
I'm sure they would. I mean, do you mean if the day was a different day? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, like you mentioned in India, it was in May. Do people celebrate it in Canada?
Oh, no, not that way. Yeah, while they're here, they go with the flow, like that it's, except if it's some kind of religious festival, then that is followed. Nothing else. I don't find that takes place. Yeah, like we have Canada Day in Canada, and to say something parallel in India would be Independence Day. That's what we call it there. But no one celebrates Independence Day here. But I have found them celebrating some religious festivals, definitely. They're coming up now in October, November. There are many of them. So that they continue to celebrate. So there's a difference. Work-wise, they're fine with Labor Day in September.
Well, that brings me to what do you think of the role of music in work? Is it a distraction? Is it beneficial?
Oh, I am very biased towards music. So I would definitely feel it would have a therapeutic effect. But I can think of many people who would find it distracting. I mean, they want to focus on whatever they're doing, and music would disrupt their trend of thought. So I don't think they could use it, you know, in an office scenario. Just when they take a break, maybe, if they are the ones who like music as well. Otherwise, it's not going to be part of their office culture. But you were thinking about a different kind of labor as well, right? A labor of love. So what about that? What is your labor of love, Charlotte?
Okay. You know, I was thinking over when I would say writing is my labor of love, because I have a book that I'm finishing. I have poems that I'm revising and finishing. So I would say writing right now is my labor of love. But when we were discussing this yesterday, I was thinking, during different times of my life, different things have been a labor of love. Right. And one of them being labor itself, you know, carrying a child.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. Yes,
focusing your attention around eating
healthier.
That
child labor, right. Right.
Did you find, did you have any particular pastime or thing that you took up during the time you were carrying your children that made it a labor of love?
Well, actually, I was working right up to the end, almost up to the 9th month, and traveling a lot also to work. Like I had to take the train, but to get to this train station, I had to take a private vehicle, then the train for at least 45 minutes, and then a place of work where I worked for maybe 8 hours, and then came back the same way, 45 minutes train and back. And I did that right until, I think, almost just a week before my first child was born. So the second one as well, It wasn't a labor of love in that sense. I didn't know what to expect, and my focus was entirely on work. And when my daughter was born, I think I did the same thing, except that now my job was closer to home and it didn't take me that long. But still, I traveled by, along with the children in school bus. I was teaching in school at that time. So it was fun though, because the students in school were very loving, and I really enjoyed that part, meeting them. And as I was on the bus, I would look at, there was a pair of twins, and I thought, I have twins. That's what I'm going to name them, Malini and Shalini. They looked very beautiful, gorgeous looking little girls. So that was what I enjoyed about having, you know, children as a labor of love. But like you said, writing for me, and my passion was teaching. And so earlier on, I used to do this, Charlotte. I always, you know, went the extra mile and tutored a few students pro bono every year. So this was one thing I was very serious about doing. And now I have developed a new labor of love. I've tried to develop some culinary skills of which I had none. And my focus is on my children and trying to make, you know, support them in whatever way I can. And so I try to cook them their favorite South Indian dishes, and I'm getting better day by day. And as you know, my other passion is singing. And so now I've started recording songs and sending them to my friends when I wish them for birthdays and anniversaries. Instead of just wishing, I send them a song. So that's my recent labor of love.
Well, sending positive messages. I know people, I send you back a message sometimes. Wow, that song was right at the right time. So your labor of love is making life less laborious for some people at some time.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlotte. In fact, I thought of two songs which would be very appropriate to Labor Day. Should I share them with you? Have you heard of 16 Tons? This was a very old song, 1955, sung by Tennessee Ernie Ford, 16 Tons. And then there was one more called 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton. So these were like songs which I thought could be appropriate to Labor Day, like country, rock, pop kind of thing.
Well, yeah, we could listen to 9 to 5. I have forgotten who wrote it or who sang it, so we can put that
Dolly
in.
Dolly Parton sang it, yeah. But and it was, there was a film by the same name, 9 to 5. But 16 Tons was based on the life of a miner, and it was sung by, this was like more, shall I say, rock and blues kind of a song, but more for a male voice. Tennessee Ernie Ford, very nice song. Maybe you could play it for our listeners sometime.
Yeah, we're going to listen to those so people can get up and move it. You know, as part of our Powered by Age podcast, we say, you know, don't sit for an hour. You can get up and move it. So first we're going to hear Dolly Parton with 9 to 5, and then 16 Tons. I can remember hearing that in people's cars, different times. They seemed to be, when people, you know, had the window rolled down when they were playing music, and you could hear from car to car people's music. But during the time that, you know, the song was popular, I can remember hearing it on different streets and just hearing it from other places in my home. It was a popular song, and I think it reflected a lot of people's feelings about the drudgery of their work.
Right. Right.
Okay, so we're going to listen to those two and then come back to our discussion.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons, a number 9 coal. And the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting and trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake by an old mama lion. Can't know a high tone woman make me walk the line. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way. Step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. You're in the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and you never get the credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5, yeah, they got you where they want you. There's a better life, and you think about it.
Well, we've been talking about the labor movement, Labor Day celebrations in the United States and Canada. And anyone that's familiar with the contemporary labor movement knows that organized labor is pretty heterogeneous. They stand for men and women, citizens, people of different ethnicities, Asian Americans, Asian Canadians, Latinos, people of African descent, undocumented workers. And so it all has made up this thing that we call the labor movement. But one thing that I wasn't aware of, and a lot of people might not know the connection between labor and civil rights movement in the States, is an article by Eric Armisen, of George Washington University, where he takes one of the key movements or moments in the emergence of the modern civil rights movement, and that was the Montgomery Boyce boycott, 1955 through 56. I was a 10-year-old, wanted to be involved in those boycotts, but got to take pictures of what was happening in cities. But the story goes from Rosa Parks, who was a tired seamstress, refused to give up her seat on a segregated public bus and launched the boycott and the movement. And most of us have just reflected on or given all of the credit to that by Dr. Martin Luther King coming in and supporting it. But the origins of the boycott came from a trade unionist, E.D. Nixon, who was a local civil rights activist, but he was also a member of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. A. Philip Randolph was the leader of that group. And Mr. Nixon approached Dr. King to lead the Montgomery Improvement Association. And trade unionists in the North offered a lot of financial and logistical support to the boycott in Washington. And the Pullman Porters, which was another group where numerous Black porters were involved and also had some influence on the Porters Union in Canada, the boycott was something that they felt was really strongly their story, and they covered it in the Black Worker, which was a journal, a monthly journal. A lot of people don't think of porters as having a journal. Porters had journals, they had meetings, they talked, and they just have been kind of an invisible part of our history. So if we go back to 1963, there were 250,000 people gathered on the National Mall before the Lincoln Memorial in Washington for that great March on Washington. And there were tens of thousands of trade unionists who helped organize people in the different cities to get them safely or to help them get to Washington. And their moral support helped make it a historic success. Civil rights leaders, labor legend, who I mentioned, A. Philip Randolph, and his assistant, Bayard Rustin, were really the most important Black trade union people in the country. He was considered to be the dean of the civil rights movement. Bernard Rustin would go on to work with the AFL-CIO years to come. And the purpose of the march, jobs and freedom. A lot of people wondered, why is Dr. King there with the trash workers, the blue collars, the people that were doing the hardest work that hadn't really been in the limelight or as focused upon in the mainstream media. And people thought it was a shift, but really it was not the civil rights movement shifting to something else. It was really a part of the abolition of segregation across the country. It also had a strong economic dimension, and the jobs that were demanded led to there being strikes. There were strikes against stores like Sears, strikes against several big companies where Black people spent a lot of their money, but were not being equally or fairly treated in the jobs or even the types of work people could get. So the sanitation strike in Memphis was another example. Civil rights movement had got some desegregation, but it hadn't really touched on the labor rights. So the sanitation workers who were affiliated with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees went on strike against the city that was forcing them to work without dignity and decent wages. So when Dr. King joined that, he was the was the last march, the last big effort he was involved with when he was assassinated. And he was in town on the strikers' behalf. So that led to a big unity between the labor movement and the civil rights movement. And subsequent years, the labor union more and more committed itself to civil rights. So I don't know, you know, if there's been that strong a commitment in Canada, you know, covered by news or covered by big parades on the unification and this, the support of civil rights. And we had one example when you pointed out what happened with the Chinese workers and the massacre that happened with their protesting. Was that supported by mainstream labor?
I'm not quite sure. But I was just, as you were talking about this, the connection between the trade unions and civil rights movement in the US, I briefly wanted to go through the history of labor in Canada, just mentioning the highlights, some of the highlights. Do we have time for that, Charlotte?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm just going to mention what they were. I'm not going to explain it. So some of the highlights, right from 1872, where there was a fight for a shorter work week. This was followed 1919 by the Winnipeg General Strike. The next was the birth of unemployment insurance. 1945 saw Windsor's Ford strike. And then a very important decision was taken next. This was called the Rand decision, where everyone who benefits should pay. So 1956, there was the founding of the Canadian Labour Congress. And in 1965, the public service workers won bargaining rights. The last two in this history of labour in Canada was the fight for the right to safety at work, and the very last was maternity and parental benefits. So that was for Canada, a brief history of. So we can say that Canada's labor movement had a strong, long history of improving workers' everyday life, fighting for many of the rights enjoyed by all workers today, like minimum wages, overtime pay, workplace safety standards, maternity, parental leave, vacation pay, and protection from discrimination and harassment. Today, unions work hard to protect the rights that we have won and to win new rights for all workers.
We're checking out one of the powerful songs of the development of the civil rights movement in connection to the labor movement. Sweet Honey and La Rock was a group often invited to perform. Let's listen to Ella's song and see how some parts of that might be your song. And remember, speak up, listen up, act upon what you've heard during this show, act upon what you hear in the rallies that will be taking place at Labor Day. Yes, it's a fun time for a picnic, could have a hot dog, but really think about what you are doing to support the rights of workers.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who That which touches me most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me. We who believe in freedom and that freedom.
Let's sing it with us. Come on.
We who believe in freedom and that freedom comes to me. People come first.
They come first.
They have the courage where we fail. And if I can but shed some light as they carry us through the gate. We who believe in freedom and God rest. We who secret of my going on is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. Not needing to clutch for power, not needing the light just to shine on me. I need to be one in the number as we stand against tyranny. We who believe in freedom can. Struggling myself don't mean a whole lot. I've come to realize that teaching others to stand and fight is the only way our struggle survives. Oh, oh, we who believe in freedom and liberty.
In Canada.
And as we've observed, a new chapter is going to be written now with people having part of their work day, some cases their whole work day at home, and others in the hybrid situation to maintain those protections. So it will really be interesting to see how people bring that to the fore. There'll be a whole different type of union formed, but I think more people will understand the power of people coming together, doing the bargaining, clarifying what the issues are. So thank you for helping me bring to the forefront reasons why we need a Labor Day, some of the reasons that we celebrate it, and that you can't have a hot dog, even a plant-based hot dog.
Definitely. Barbecue.
Yes.
Hot dog.
And we will see you again next week. I'm Charlotte Fair, your own Sister C. We are having this combination of input from Powered by Age, Canada's longest running senior-led podcast, and CJSF, the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon What You Have Heard show. So I hope you heard something this morning you'll take action on, and I'll see you again. And you know what I say when people ask me what time it is? It is always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time, time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love. Love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, time for poems, poets, singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time.